Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Grammy? Welcome back to the number one dog training podcast in the world. Thank you so much for listening. I just got back from England. It was absolutely lovely. All the footage of me working with all the dogs who came out is going to be uploaded on the Tom Davis Online Academy. So you can click the link to find out more information on that. That's basically an online academy at a low monthly cost to work with me and my trainers every single week, as well as all the uncut stuff. Also, I'm going to be in New Zealand and Australia in November. I'm super excited to get out there. Tickets and information is in the link below. Please come out and see me if you want to. I will not be back for a very long time, unfortunately. We have a lot of stuff to do, and we've already kind of committed to that. So I hope to see you guys out down under. And this podcast is absolutely wonderful for anybody who's just scratching their head, trying to figure out what the heck to do with the reactive dog, and they've tried everything. The information in this podcast is presented in a way that I have not necessarily done before. I go through a 1-2-3 step that I should actually start coining and talking about, which I will after this. But this is a fantastic podcast. Thank you for listening. Enjoy this podcast, and we'll talk to you in the next episode. What's going on?
So what we have, we've had dogs now, for about 22 years. And we like to think we're somewhat responsible. So we got a trainer like yourself years ago with our first dog. Since then, we've still been in contact with Eric, and he's phenomenal, but we are states away, and he's, you know, really, like you'll probably admit, that you're really not training the dog, you're training the person. So he always gives us little things. When we got our second dog, we're now on our third dog, we called and said, hey, you know, give us some ideas here and there and a quick crash course refresher. Mm-hmm. We have no problem. This last dog, and there's no problems. We're just trying to get him in a better place, us in a better place. So
we currently have two dogs, two large dogs.
Yeah. The other dogs were like boxer labs, mutts. We always tend to go with the, rescues. Mm-hmm. And we were at a street fair, and we were kind of talking about getting another dog. Our one dog's it's 13th year, and anyway, we came across the dog. He was a rescue. He's a Dutch Shepherd. It was 13 months, they guessed, and he had been at that shelter for about 6 to 8 months. And very rambunctious, as you know, the breed is, very high energy, scared a lot of people off. But we went back several times. He was a good fit for us. The question is now at 13 months, I've always only trained puppies. So very easy. Tom, we do a lot of our training through praise. We hardly used kibble. Or anything else for that matter. So as a pup, no problem. 13-month-old, full strength, you know, high energy dog, not so much. But we've got him with all the obedience, verbal as well as hand signals. But where we're having a problem with him is when he was in the, we call it the hooskow, there was an issue, not an issue, but he developed, I think, a lot of social anxiety and problems with other dogs. He gets very excited about other dogs to the point where he charges them. His haunches are up. It's very hard for me to read them. And he, our problem is this, Tom, he redlines. He goes, I got no verbal communication with him. He does not listen. I can hold him back if he's on the lead. But a lot of times it's concerning. It's very scary. I mean,
what it does is it really puts him in a prison. We don't generally walk him very much. We take him to the park and play Frisbee to get his energy out.
Mm. Yeah. But, first thing.
Like I can't walk him.
Yeah. My wife. Well, yeah. Yeah. My wife could walk him if there's no other dogs around. It was a little bit with people and some buses and big trucks. I was able to snap them of that. That was no problem, just with lead training and, you know, a snap of a leash. But when it's animals, I've been able, like squirrels and deer, I've been able to snap them of that and get them, correct him. I shouldn't say snap, but correct him of that, you know, instinct of just taking off. Mm-hmm. But with other dogs and where we're at, Tom, this is I'll just spend a little bit on this. The main purpose of this is my wife and I would like to travel, and we're looking at getting an RV, and we want to take him with. And another thing is when we fly or travel now, my daughter stays with him. And I do not want to crate or kennel him anymore because of where he's been. I don't know how that would affect him. So he's been with family since we adopted him, what, two years now?
Yeah.
So about 2.5 years.
So you mean when you say you don't want to crate or kennel him, you mean you don't want to put him in a boarding facility?
Correct.
Got it.
Correct.
Okay.
I would have reservations of that. Sure. I don't want him to think that we would abandon him again, because he was Tom, he would not show, like, it went for, gosh, at least how long? It was a year before his tail would wag.
Mm-hmm.
We could see that he was happy. He followed us. He acclimated, but he was for a year, he was like very unsure of the process, what's going on. And now, I mean, he's like, any other emotional, you know, or normal signs of emotion that a dog would give. And I don't want to jeopardize have him lose confidence. Because it was maybe very traumatic for him being in that shelter for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So now, so just to put everything together, so right now you're wanting to travel with him in an RV, but his reactivity to other dogs is limiting you in your ability to do so.
Well, that as well as we just feel like we've had him now for 2.5 years, 2.25 years, and, you know, the training, everything's going great, but that it's too much for me. And he's just too strong. I mean, he is all muscle. And I mean, we exercise him. We did a half hour at the park today. He'll swim today. We get him on a treadmill. My wife throws the ball for him throughout the day. He's a Velcro dog. He is always within the room, and within eyesight, within several feet of us generally when we're home.
Okay. So when you say
no separation anxiety, you know, when we leave, we've not experienced that.
Right. Got it. So when you say that he's too much, so are you thinking about getting rid of him, or what do you?
No, never, never. No, okay. That's just it. No, it's just too much in the fact that for me to, I don't see that I'm going to get where we want to be comfortably, because the next step Tom, is we would like to, this is an RV. We want to be able to take him to restaurants if we should go to, walk through a new town, be able, we don't want to leave him in the RV. We want to be, is if anytime we can allow, we want him with us. And we also would like the potential of flying with him if should that be the case.
Okay. So, right now when he reacts, what does it look like? How does it present itself?
Full on lunge. It seems like it could be an attack. He's whining. He makes noises that
it frightens the person who's with the other dog, obviously.
Yeah.
And of course the other dog. And a couple of times he's actually lunged at another dog.
But
there was no biting.
But no,
like that.
Yeah. We've not seen. However, the haunches are up, and he's menacing because he's a brindle. You know what the Dutch shepherds look like. I mean, he can be menacing looking, and he's big. And then all of a sudden, his mouth is huge, and he's big white canines, and it's, you know, he's snapping and he's whining and lunging and. I'm really pulling it back. My wife, in that scenario, my wife probably would not be able to hold him. And my wife is a retired firefighter, so she's not a wallflower by any means. So he's a bit much when it comes to, and he goes redline. Like I can't hold him. I can't, not that I can't hold him. I can't snap him out of his focus.
Yeah. So, when you're trying to snap him out of his focus, what equipment are you using when you're trying to snap him out of his focus? So when he's a big dog, he's reactive on the leash, he lunges, shows his teeth, barks. Because equipment makes a significant difference as it does with anything you're doing. So what equipment are you using to correct him at this time?
So it's really just a lead. I would, a lot of times what I'll do is I'll try to, if I have, like when we're coming to a situation where I see the dog, I'll try to, you know, make a noise and tap his hind corners, like with my fingers, like I'm kind of prodding him a little bit, like I'll ch-ch like that just to get, and then I'll say, nope. And, you know, with totally no success. We even brought a squeaky toy. He loves his balls that squeak. I brought, and that got his attention. And then for the first time, and then after that, it didn't. So that renders itself useless. And then I got I think it's a loose leash collar. So I put it on with his regular leash where it loops around. It's, I get like, I wouldn't call it a, it's like, I guess a choking collar or choking leash where it kind of has a slip on it. So when he pulls, it will choke him.
There's no barbs or anything.
There's no barbs or anything. Upon one of your recommendations on an older video that you had out that was successful. And it got, I had reservations because he was pulling so hard. I did not want to cause injury.
Generally speaking, if we see another dog, Tom, we turn around.
We do now.
We don't want to traumatize the dog or the person that's got
our neighbors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So a couple things. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the leash training, is the thing, but it's also mainly, it's a behavioral thing. I said to Lisa, I feel that a lot of this is stemmed from him being in the kennel and all the dogs just get into a frenzy barking.
We really don't understand why he does this.
He's never bit another dog or person that we're aware of. He's been with us, you know, since he was 13 months. However, in a way, he didn't bite the dog, but our neighbor has a German Shepherd, and she's just too much. She's
a bitch.
Yeah, they call her the shark, the bitch. She does not like, and my neighbor Tom also said, listen, you got to take her off the leash when him off the leash because Angel will attack him. Like if she sees a dog on a leash, she attacks him, any animal for that matter. And so I said, no problem. And then Zeus is fast. He's very agile.
They
would play and run, and she couldn't catch him. And he thought it was kind of a joke. Well, my wife, I was over there one day, they were away. I was taking care of the house. My wife brought Zeus, didn't think of it. Zeus was on the leash. She kind of started getting closer and closer. And then she kind of started really like biting and being aggressive. And of course he showed his teeth, and they're kind of, you know how they kind of do when they're moving their heads back and forth. And I think one of his canines caught her temple. But he didn't bite her. There were no bite marks. But he was reacting to her, yes. But he's such a big dog, Tom, and so strong. If something were to happen, it would be catastrophic.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like you got an interesting situation with the neighbor as well. Okay, so there's a couple ways to go about this. There's the grassroots way, which is what I like to focus on, which essentially means, like, right now, what you really need to be focusing on is your level of obedience and communication and relationship with the dog, because every single dog reacts for different reasons. And for most cases, it's genetics. It's the dogs, in this case, makes sense. The environment that the dog was bringing in. So, you know, you get a working dog and, you know, they want to bark and react, and maybe they feel insecure. There's so many reasons of why these things can happen. But the reality is you have to make sure that you have the ability to communicate with your dog before you even try to stop something. So a lot of people, they want to stop this, right? So I call it the stop it syndrome. So you want to just stop the dog from reacting. Like, it's very normal for these things to happen, right? Like, you just, all you want is, hey, I want to stop the dog from reacting. Like, that's all I care about. It's all I want to do. And it makes sense. It's like, okay, but it's not that easy, right? It's this, and a lot of dog owners, like, the way that I explain it is it's the same equivalence to just like telling somebody, like, I want to lose 100 pounds, or I want to put $1 million in the bank, or whatever. That's like how I hear it. You know, obviously it's a much different roadmap in which you have to go down. It's not that easy, in other words. So really what you need to be focusing on is you need to focus on what you're going to be able to do to communicate with the dog that what they're doing is inappropriate, as well as giving them something else to do. So you've already brought up the squeaker toy, which was ineffective, right? So you said, hey, I want you to play with this instead. It's a good thought. It's a little like constructive avoidance. Hey, I want you to do this instead to ignore the dog. Sometimes it works, but what it comes down to, guys, is it comes down to the dog's drive economics, right? So the dog wanting to say, hey, I would rather react than play with the tug, right? So that's really important to kind of understand. As a lot of people, like, on paper, I'm just going to go out with food, or I'm going to go out with a tug or a toy or the dog's favorite ball. And because the dog loves it so much, this is going to help us get us through. And sometimes that is true. But in most cases, with very high energy, high drive dogs, it doesn't compete, right? The currency of the ball or the food or the squeaky toy with the currency or the distraction of another dog is imbalanced, right? So some cases not. Like, if you have a dog that's just reacting because they're bored, or they don't know what else to do or whatever. You can get away with that because they're half-assing it, really. So they're not really fully committing because they don't, like my dog, I talk about him all the time, but it just makes people understand it more. Like he's a very, very, very protective dog. He does also like food. So depending on the circumstance, there's some times where he's like, yeah, I'll take the food. And then other times he actually feels really threatened and he won't. And so the other thing is just having, you know, good obedience. I mean, this is the line that it goes is having the ability to counteract or counter condition. Hey, play with this instead. And the dog says, "Ooh, okay, piece of candy. I'm over here. What dog?" But that's again, really only works 20% of the time. And then the next piece to this is just understanding what the dog's fundamental base is as skill sets. So it's like, "Hey, Tom, my dog pulls me. Okay, how's your heel?" "Well, I've never done that." "Okay, next." "Hey, Tom, my dog won't come back. How's your recall?" "Next." So very similar to leash reactivity. Hey, Tom, my dog won't stop barking at other dogs. Okay, how's your leave it?" Right? So you have to work on, you can't just stop something. You can, but it's much, much more difficult than actually reprogramming the dog's ability to understand what you want them to do clearly, which in this case would be leave it. Or in some cases, it would be heel. It kind of just depends. But the idea is most people, because I work primarily with this, leash reactivity is 97% of my clientele. And so what happens is dog owners, they want the dog to stop doing something. And again, it could be anything. And then my question to them is, okay, how much time have you spent on the skill set to accomplish that? Again, if your dog's pulling, heel. If your dog's not coming back, recall. And if your dog's barking and reacting, it would be leave it and some other things. So that's kind of like the first line of defense is dog owners who don't have a good foundation will never be successful when they're trying to stop their dog from reacting because they're just looking for, unintentionally looking for a secret cheat code here, like a loophole. Like, how do I just get it to stop? It's possible. For sure, to just get it to stop, but I want it to be sustainable, which then kind of leads me, and it's kind of a ladder system, to be honest. It really is a ladder system from starting off with, hey, come over here instead, and the dog's like, oh, okay, fine. They're not really committed to the reaction anyway. And then the second piece to that is having obedience to say, hey, leave it, and the dog says, okay, fine. Telling the dog to down as the other dog passes. Telling the dog to focus on you as the other dog passes. Now, these are all things that are, in my opinion, pretty mandatory when you're working with these things.
Yep.
However,
that's how, I don't mean to interrupt, but how we stop with people in cars and trucks. As they go by, we put them in a sit stay.
Yeah.
So car leaves, we release them. Our release command is you're through. So, you know, and that's how, but with other dogs, Tom, we tried that. I even... Mm-hmm. But he just loses it. And then what I do is leave, put him in a sit stay. The dog's still far enough away. I put slack on the lead, and then I step on it where it's loose on him. But if he can't get up, like he goes to get up, you know, the leash is pinned to the ground and it pulls on him. But it he's so strong, he'll lift my leg up. You know, it's when it's like he really goes red line so that I just, you know, that's how we snap them of those other people and the cars and things like that. But other animals, that's where we're it's yeah.
So Tom, what you're saying is we need to refine our lead commands and lead time with him, because honestly he really gets very little lead time.
Well, we try, yeah,
because simply because we're reacting to his reaction by not walking him, because we're inept to care for him when he needs us most, when he's like redlined.
Yeah, I mean, he's off lead even when we're out front of our house.
And we don't live in the city. We live kind of in the country.
Yeah, we have some space in we have the backyard fence, but the front and everything, and we're just always meandering around the property. And we have deer going by. When we have them now, he'll come back. So the recall is good there. and we can put him in a sit or a stay when we see the deer before he does, and no problem. So we're dialing a lot of that in. He's very obedient. Yeah, he's a pleaser, Tom. He wants to please. I just think that there's a glitch that he had in the shelter that I just don't understand.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
A better help ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
And how to snap them with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and it could be, and you guys are doing all the right things, and that's exactly what I was talking about with this kind of dog economics, where even if the dog knows what you want them to do, there's still this like third step of the dog says, no, I know what you want, but I'm going to do this. So having that base and having that foundation is crucial, because you can't try to accomplish something without it. Because then if your dog stops barking, I mean, I guess you can just move on and keep walking. But you really want to have structure. You keep going to a test and you keep failing, right? And the first thing you should ask yourself is like, okay, we need to study for this. We need skill sets. We need knowledge. We need to study. We need experience. We need to know some sort of roadmap to make sure when our dog starts reacting under any circumstance, we have some sort of base to say, hey, here's what I want you to do. But the reality is once the dog, once you tell the dog to, you know, to down, and their economics or their currency overrides you, right? So in a lot of cases with dog owners, it means that the dog is into a down because you've taught them to down with food or praise or reward at some point. So the dog says, okay, I'll down because it's expected of me. And this is a lot of like what you guys are, this is your relationships from what you've told me. So if you teach a dog how to down, and this is most people, to be fair, if you teach a dog how to down and they say, okay, if I down, I get a piece of beef liver, or I get a cookie, I get a whatever. The dog downs, you pay the dog gets back up out of a break. You tell a dog to sit, they get a cookie, whatever. So if that's the way that your whole relationship is, and that's the kind of the balancing act that you play with your dog, meaning if there's not much going on, and a lot of people, again, struggle with this every day. Hey, Tom, my dog won't listen to me outside. My dog won't listen if there's distractions, blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing, right? So we teach a dog, sit. They put their butt in the ground. We give them a piece of treat. They go, oh, this is great. I like this sitting thing. So now if your relationship is one-dimensional, which means if the dog does something that you want, they get paid. They get something that they like, aka they get currency, right? There's value there. There's an economic value there for them. There's a transaction that happens. So then what you want to do is you go out and you say, hey, dog, down, because there's a dog walking by. But what happens is the dog says, I would rather screw your cookie. I'd rather go towards the dog. So that's that one-dimensional type of training that a lot of people go down unintentionally and sometimes intentionally, but this is why they fail. So you tell the dog to down. They say no, because I don't want your food. I want to go after the dog. And so sometimes the dog isn't even misbehaving. They're just choosing the higher reward. They're being opportunistic sometimes. And then other times they know the behavior and they are just blowing you off. So then comes the next step is the third ladder here. The third step on this ladder would be correcting the dog if they don't listen, right? So it's all these things work together. Step one, step two, step three, they all work together in conjunction with one another. So if you go out, you got your treat pouch on, the dog sees a dog, hackles go up, ears go up, they're perked up. You say, leave it. They go, no. You say, focus. They say, no. You say, no. So at this point, you said, hey, look over here. I got something for you. They say, I don't care about it because that's more important. Very common. Same thing why people can't get their dog to come back when they're chasing squirrels or deer, or kangaroos or whatever off leash. It's because the thing that they're chasing is more valuable than what you have in your bag, period. And it's also our fault and our responsibility as dog owners to understand that's actually the training model that we taught the dog. If you come to me, you get this. So when they're out in reality and they choose something else, it's kind of hard to decipher whether or not they're actually not listening or they're just being opportunistic and doing basic economics of what's more valuable to them. And so the correction comes in kind of the third piece here. So you say, hey, dog, leave it. They go, oh, I know what that is, but this thing is more important, correction. So accountability and consequence for the dog not listening. And that's what I was saying before is the skill sets are important because that's what you're enforcing. So you could just correct a dog if they lunged and barked. There's no problem with that, really. It's just not going to be as clear to the dog that they're doing something as wrong as if you had a leave it, right? So if you said leave it, which means you need to disengage off of whatever you're doing, and the dog doesn't, they get correction. So the correction is kind of like that third and final piece. And it really is from the, and I have nothing to gain out of obviously teaching you guys my ideology, right? It's been something I've been practicing as a practitioner for almost 13 years now, every single day with every type of gene pool I could find around the world. And this has been the most successful format with reactive dogs. And so the dog lunges and reacts. You say, hey, you're acting like you want to kill this dog and scare the crap out of this person and all these things. And we don't really know what he would do, but we just know that it's extremely inappropriate and it's causing stress in your life. And it could even limit your ability to live life to the fullest from a human standpoint, which is like the biggest tragedy there is, right? You guys can't even do the things you want to do as adults in life. And so when you correct the dog and say, hey, leave it and knock it off, that's like one of the biggest missing components to this conversation and like other people. So if you use like the slip lead or the slip collar, there's a ladder system to that. So the way that it works with dogs is there's obviously a utility to the equipment that you're using depending on the size of the dog, but there's also levels of aversive corrections to dogs, meaning is the accountability enough to either get through to the dog or for them to actually care about what's going on, which is kind of the game you have to play, right? It's the same thing on a reward-based system. You want a dog to pay attention to you and they don't care about a ball. Okay, move to food. Now they don't care about food. Okay, move to a squeaky toy on a prey pull. Okay, now they're into it. So it's the same type of formula that you would use when you're trying to figure out what your dog is into, is you want to figure out what your dog cares about and doesn't like. And so let's say, for humans, it would be, hey, if you go 75 miles per hour in a 30, I'm going to pull you over, take your license away, tow your vehicle, and give you a fine. Okay, I don't want to do that. Versus if you go 70 and a 30, we're going to flash our lights and give you a warning every time. Like, there's a difference in how you would behave after that. And so with dogs, and it depends on the dog. Like if you're working with a 6-month-old little puppy that has never been corrected before, doesn't really know the difference between right and wrong, like we're not going to correct that puppy and use the same equipment with that puppy as we would a year old Dutch Shepherd that's reacting like Cujo. Like it's the same thing with kids. Like a 21-year-old kid who does something absolutely unsafe and reckless is going to get punished differently than a 5-year-old who spills somebody's milk at recess on purpose, whatever, right? So with dogs, that's what you have to start looking at. So the slip leash and the slip collar with a really big, heavy, powerful, explosive dog is probably not going to be the ticket. But most importantly, it's not going to be as safe. So I know that you referred to that's a dog pulling really, really hard. And you were like, I didn't really feel comfortable like applying all this pressure to the dog. And that's why other pieces of equipment are invented, right? So the prong collar is a safer bet. The plastic pinch collar is a safer bet. And even the remote collar under those circumstances is safer because you're not physically fighting with the dog, which can cause all sorts of conflict and actually make the situation worse. but it's also not safe for a really heavy dog to be pulling like that. But again, going back to like level two or step two, if you will, the dog has to also know, like if you corrected a dog with a leash and collar, no matter what you're using, you would want them to do something alternatively as well. So heel, leave it, right? So I would say, judging by what you've told me, the tool that you're correcting with has not been appropriate and hasn't been effective. And that's, I think that that's what you guys should start really focusing on. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yep. So and I'm not opposed to, you know, a knee collar, but my concern with the e-collar is I'm concerned about him being the guinea pig of me trying to learn how to work the thing and correct him properly. Now, I know our trainer before was, and very much so like what you're saying about, you know, Eric's thing was, if you're walking and he's acting up, turn around, go home. Or turn around, go the other way till he calms, gets him under control, turn around, go back. When you got him under control, and if he responds, turn around, go back. But our problem with that is the dog, like, it'd be great if we had a neighbor dog that was always there and would bark and we'd have this issue, but this issue sometimes doesn't happen on a walk, which is great for us, or it's at the end of our drive, or it's a mile away from our house. So it was very difficult. And then I couldn't get that person to say, hey, would you just stay right here so I can fix this dog?
Another thing, which is probably something that's very common in high energy dogs, after we leave the park and we're on our way home, if we do see a dog, we've been in the car, the window's down, he's pretty nonchalant about it. So,
well, he responds, but we can, our discipline word is nope.
Yeah.
And you know, he'll whine a little bit and obviously control himself. But if we're on the way to the park, or we hadn't been to the park, or he's had a half hour to rest, and he's, you know, because when we go to the park, he's a frisbee dog. I mean, he, unbelievable, you know, we just burn a lot of energy off of him. So that helps. But yeah, when we're on the way to the park, if you see a dog, he could potentially, you know, it seems like he's going to go through the window. The e-collar, Tom, I would just want to make sure that I have the correct strong fundamentals, that I know what I'm doing going into this, instead of him learning. Learning on him, so to speak, which I would be anyway, but I just want to make sure I have strong skill set with that. So, I mean, I don't know, is that something that could be done in-house with you or one of your trainers?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what you should feel. Like, you don't want to, like the e-collar, the prong collar, whatever, like all these pieces of equipment are, you got to learn how to use them, which is kind of how I built my career, really, is I just started putting out videos on, and I see a lot of people who don't like these tools, but I also see that these people don't have any idea what these tools are. So I'm going to start explaining to people how these tools are actually made. And so absolutely, that you should have those reservations, and that is the right approach to have, and the mindset to have is you want to do it right. And so when you do the e-collar introduction, yes, I mean, you definitely can find e-collar courses online that I have done, but also with what you're doing, you could come in and do e-collar training. It just kind of depends on, you know, the format and the schedule. So the way that I train is I do an out-of-state program where people come, we call it the out-of-state. It's now called the 3-day transformation program, where you could come in and actually work with me for 2.5 days at my facility. That's the only training that I'm doing so far. But you can also train with my trainers. It just depends, but you'd have to come like once a week. So there is ways to do it. Yes.
Okay. Well, so,
So the prong, it, the, there's an option between the prong collar and the e-collar.
Well, here's
certain dogs have a better benefit from one as opposed to the other, or is it just personal preference?
Well, before you answer that, Tom, one of the piece I want to add is the reason I'm not fond of, not fond, the reason I would prefer the e-collar is I would like to off-leash train him to walk off lead. So the prong collar doesn't help us in that scenario. If it, you know, where the e-collar, we could have the recall if he were to take off or anything else. And especially if we are traveling in the RV and there's no space around, you know, he takes off, boom, you could, you know, recall him on the collar. But with that said, Tom, take over.
Yeah, there. To answer your question, there are two different tools for really two different things. They have a lot of nuances.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, if you were to ask me, which happened earlier in my last week at my England seminar, and I answered it like this: the e-collar is to advance your communication wirelessly. Anything else that you put on the leash is for that. It's leash work. But I will say this. With a hard pulling dog, the prong collar is going to be the safest tool for sure. Everything that you've used is either pointless or even dangerous, right? So you have a really hard pulling dog. The prong collar was invented for hard pulling dogs, for you to correct them and handle them much safer, full stop, right? So instead of adding one point of pressure on the dog, like a slip or a dominant dog collar, or even a martingale collar, the prong collar actually evenly distributes the pressure all the way around. So it's a much safer collar to use. So you're actually harnessing the dog's muscles instead of a lot of times an ill-propered slip leash just choking the dog out, frankly. And so the prong collar really is a system and a tool and has a lot of utility based off of technique and precision. So really a quick flick of your wrist from a not so huge, strong person is enough to really communicate with the dog. And so the prong collar for like your everyday, I'm on a walk and if my dog lunges and things like that, is a really safe tool to use. The only caveat to that is there is definitely some potential issues with redirection. So when a dog, and it's hard to say, but when a dog is loading or getting really stimulated, really frustrated, really upset, and in most cases, this is only applicable for a dog who actually wants to hurt another dog and wants to kill another dog, really. If you correct a dog with a prong collar or any physical correction when a dog is in that state of mind, you do have the risk and a heightened risk of redirection. Now, it's not super common, but something to be mindful of, that the prong collar correction, or in that case, any physical correction from a leash when a dog is in that state of mind, you do gamble the risk of the dog redirecting, basically coming back at you. It's not super common, but that is just something I like to say. So if you were to ask me, okay, this is stressful. Here's the thing, guys, is it's stressful for your dog. It's stressful for you. It's stressful for the other people. It's a lose, 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 lose. So we have to be a result-driven kind of case study here. It's how I run my life and everything in life with business or family or travel. It's like, if this works, this is what we're going to do, right? So my suggestion would be tinker around with a well-fit prong collar. So the prong collar is, and again, when I have a 6-month-old little doodle who is pulling a little bit on the leash, I'm not going to necessarily use a prong collar because it's not necessary for that dog, right? It might be safer long-term for the owner, but the prong collar is a really safe tool to really harbor your ability to communicate with the dog much, much more efficient, much more effective. And again, you don't have it. Listen, you know, I don't care what you guys do after this. All I'm saying is the prong collar, from what you've told me, would be a safer option currently. The e-collar is going to be kind of the finishing touches. So the remote collar is a privilege. The remote collar is your ability to condition an animal, and in your case, your dog, obviously, to a computer. So a lot of times we condition dogs off of verbal cues matched with food and a rope, a leash, aka a leash, right? So when you look at the dynamics of, again, in the temperature of dog training, especially online, is, as you probably already know, extremely binary. It's like, if you do this, you're the worst person in the world and you're the devil. And if you don't do this, it's like, it's crazy. And if you work with animals long enough, you know that that is absolutely 100% inaccurate, right? Every single dog is going to present different information and different behaviors and different personalities, different temperaments, different sizes, etc. It's absolutely unrealistic, unfair, unprofessional, and inhumane to suggest any dog's going to be working the same, right? So the e-collar is a tool that we're going to be used in a modern conditioning way. And so that gives you the ability to condition your dog wirelessly. So you do have the ability to do that for sure. I just think that the steps here would be just to give you like my what I would recommend. It would be taking my leash reactivity course, if you haven't already, which is a low-hanging fruit for you guys to really dive into it, okay? Then in conjunction with that, you get a nice properly fitted prong collar, which I have multiple free videos on YouTube on how to do that and where to get them. You could also get a plastic pinch collar, which is kind of a grade below as far as a correction. But really what you guys want right now is you want the dog to really, you want it to matter, okay? You have to meet your dog where they're at. Hey, Tom, my dog is lunging, showing teeth, snapping at the end of the leash, and I, you know, I want to basically whisper to them to stop. It's like, no, it's just not going to happen, right? Like, unfortunately. So my suggestion would be to get a nicely fit prong collar with a safety clip, start working on your basics, because you have to, in my leash reactivity course, which is called Reactive to Neutral, I go over the foundation. So I go over, hey, if you don't have good leash pressure, if you don't have good communication skills, sit, down, stay, leave it. If your dog doesn't engage with you, if you don't know how to do a tune-up, like all these things, you're going to be wasting your time. It doesn't matter what tool you get. You know, if you got the prong or the e-collar or the martingale or the nose halty, it doesn't matter. Like you don't have anything. So that would be kind of the roadmap. And the remote collar is exactly what you said it does. It would give you the opportunity to kind of, okay, we have good obedience. My dog listens to me. It's sustainable. Now I just want to really foster this to go completely wirelessly and off leash. And so one thing you said, Michael, is you said you wanted the dog to listen to you from, you know, off leash and on leash. And the remote collar, I want you to think about it like this. The remote collar allows you to enforce and communicate off leash. No other tool in the world on the planet allows you to enforce things off leash. Nothing. So that means if your dog's taken off after a bear, squirrel, chipmunk, or other dog, and you say, hey, come, and they flip you off and say, this is more important to me, you can't disrupt or interrupt that. Nothing can except the remote collar, right? Effectively. And so one thing that you said, I want you to kind of frame a little bit differently in your mind, because I think it's going to be helpful, is when you're doing, and this is part of like the foundation. So let's say right now, what's your dog's name?
Zeus.
Okay. Zeus, sit. Zeus says, I know sit, and I don't want to sit because I hear a squirrel on the tree. So right now, your correction for not sitting is likely from what you've already told me, considering the breed, the temperament, and what you're already doing. If you correct the dog with what you have right now, it's very, very, very not effective to the dog. Like, the dog doesn't care about that correction too much, okay? So here's the thing, is once the dog starts caring about the enforcement, right? So it'd be the difference of telling a teenager right now that if they don't listen, they can't watch TV. You know, okay, whatever. Okay, now you have no phone, no TikTok. Boom. What? Sorry. What do you want to do? Right? So the accountability and the correction and what you're using right now, again, is likely ineffective to the dog from what you've told me. And so when you tell a dog to do something, I want you to think of this as a huge picture right here. Like, this is the macro. This is probably the most important thing, in my opinion, that you'll get from me right now, is your relationship with the dog right now is one-dimensional, likely. So that means the dog will listen if it's convenient. Nothing else going on, nothing to react to, and you got some yummy stuff in your pocket or because you tell them that they were a good boy. Zeus sit, yeah, sure. Zeus down, yeah, sure. Zeus stay, yeah, sure. Other dog, right into a different mode. So right now, when you correct your dog and you say, hey, leave it, no, whatever, like you said, you kind of have that verbal correction, right? And so right now, your verbal correction is enforced by something the dog doesn't care about. And so once you actually start holding the dog accountable with an enforcement that they do respect, that they do care about, that they do want to avoid, your sustainability of what comes out of your mouth is superior and much more effective. So right now, if you, let's say you, 5 months from now, you got out of your RV that you may or may not have now, and Zeus slips out and there's a dog standing right there. You say, Zeus, come. In his mind, it's going to go really quick. If I don't come, I'm going to get correction, which I absolutely hate, and I want to avoid that, which means I'm going to participate in recalling, okay? That's one mindset, right? Because you've corrected him in the past from a collar that he cares about, aka the prong collar, the e-collar, whatever. Now, let's say same situation, but right now he's getting corrected by a gentle leader or a slip collar, something that he doesn't really care about. So the consequences for not listening are minimal. The actual ROI of him chasing the other dog and lunging and getting near the other dog, even if he just goes and scares the crap out of him, is much higher, right? And so one thing that you said that really stuck out to me is, I want the dog to listen off leash, but your fundamental obedience and the dog understanding with balance that if they don't listen, there's consequences. And if they do listen, there's rewards and praise and all that fun stuff. And right now you have an imbalance, which means right now the dog doesn't care about what happens if they don't listen. And so I have found with my clients and with my personal dogs over the years, which is why I train the way that I do, is if I don't have any equipment on them and I tell them to do something, because they've been corrected in a way before that they care about, that means something to them, they listen. Versus having to go through this horse and pony show of, come over here, I have something really goody, and then telling the dog to come back 4 or 5 times as you're panicking to get to them first. Like, there's the respect level isn't there. So I just wanted to throw that in there for you so you can chew on that as we continue.
Okay. Yep. Totally understood.
What questions do you have?
So prong collar, you're saying, would be a good point to start, and then get a basis with that and control with him. And then you're saying then the e-collar would be something, then that would be the fine-tuned step once we're getting the main reaction under control. Okay, is that like, so those are like the two. So step one, e-collar, prong collar, then step two, e-collar, fine-tune it. My question on those is, now you had said about a leash reactive course.
Yes. And that will.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So on that leash reactive course, would that be a one? So one of the things I we couldn't do that in a group setting, at least in the beginning, or maybe if I got the prong collar under control a little bit. But then if I do that, it's possible that the leash reactive course would not be necessary. I don't know. So what point do you feel that course maybe is not necessary? We go to the next step.
So the course that I'm referring to is it's a at home course that you take on your own, that you download, and what that'll tell you is it'll give you everything I'm talking about, but in a couple hour form, right? It's really all laid out. Hey, here's the equipment that you have. Here's the equipment that has worked. Here's what you need. You know, all that stuff. So it really kind of gives you all that. So my suggestion would be just going down the process of the leash reactivity course, because it'll give you all this extra stuff that you may need. So you can take that at any time, But I just think right now what you should be focusing on is just being able to control, because right now you have a liability.
Yes.
Okay. So you need.
It could be. It could. Yeah.
Yeah. You need to really take control over this liability so you don't. Well, listen. Any dog is a liability, and it doesn't matter if they're aggressive or friendly. It's if you don't holster what you have on the leash, you are responsible, right? So. Mm-hmm. It's really important for you to make sure you know what you're doing. And that's what I was referring to, that reactivity course. And again, I want you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to do whatever works. That is the most successful thing in dog training, hands down, objectively, is going to be whatever works, right? And right now what you're doing isn't working. And so my suggestion is start to use some tools that will really communicate. I have two Dutch. I have a Malinois and a Dutch Shepherd, and I've worked with hundreds. I've worked with them at a military level. I've worked with them at a pet level. I've worked with them at a police level. I've seen so many different calibers of these dogs, but one thing will remain the same is these dogs are very, very confident typically. And when they want to do something, they want to do something, right? Mm-hmm. And so unless you meet them where they're at, you are not going to be able to communicate in an effective way, right? So my suggestion, considering what you've told me and all the other dogs that I've worked with in the past, is if you get a nicely fit prong collar with the dog, you can start communicating with the dog at a level that he actually can pick up. Where right now he sees red, I think you said a couple times, he sees red and he just red lines and he goes. So whatever you say or do right now, you better just buckle up and hang on, because you're not talking to him, you're not communicating with him, you're not getting to him.
So
your ability to actually step in and disrupt what he's doing, to say, hey man, stop what you're doing, this is inappropriate, you're causing yourself all this stress and you don't need to. And then he'll look at you. And he'll look at you and go, okay, yeah, you're right. I don't like that. What do you want me to do? And you're going to say, heal. Okay, I know that. Oh, and here's your favorite food, by the way, for being such a good boy. Well, next time we go out, that's going to be a better decision roadmap, right? So, yeah, that would be the roadmap. Take my suggestion, take the reactivity course, get yourself a nicely fit prong. In the course, it goes over all that stuff. It goes over how to fit everything and, you know.
Oh, great.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Where to get it. And
that's you have that online.
Yep. Wonderful. Yeah. It's on it's TomDavisCourses.com, reactive to neutral course. And I go through, it's a very thorough thing, right? It's like reactivity is my bread and butter. And I literally spent a month or in change putting together the content to put out there so people can really walk through each process and what's been successful. So that's my suggestion. And then the e-collar is going to be the finishing touches. You have to get your basics down first, and then you can start thinking about the e-collar. And I have a course for that as well, but that's my suggestion.
And is that course online or is that in person?
Yep, it's online. Okay. And many, many, many people have gone through the e-collar course because they live in countries and places that nobody knows what they're doing with it. They don't feel comfortable, and they've successfully. I just went to England to do a seminar last weekend. A girl from Austria said she took my e-collar course. She actually was against e-collars. She hated them. She watched my videos, and it's changed her life forever. And so my suggestion. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I see her out in the fields and her dogs are off leash and they're living their best life. And it's an incredible ability. But I don't want you guys to be like, oh, here's the thing, is I don't want you to be overwhelmed with anything. I want you to understand that, in my opinion, from what you've told me, you're squaring a round hole here. I'm trying to get this to work, but it's not working. From my experience, you could get this thing straightened out because you're using the wrong equipment, right? You're showing up to the job site using the wrong equipment. Once you start using the right equipment, things are going to fall into place and you're going to see results much, much faster.
So excited.
It is exciting. I'm telling you, it's like, it's such a game changer. Once you go, holy crap, this makes sense. I got to start doing this, and things will change for you pretty dramatically. And if you guys watch my videos, which of course you have, what you see is what you get. And you watch a video of somebody coming in and the next day they're walking out crying because their dog is finally doing what they wanted. It's a lot to do with technique, equipment, exercises, relationships. So,
Well, you know, it's crazy how when we did our training with our other two dogs, they are all, well, the ones passed, but they're off lead. They're weak, they're totally verbal control. Well, unfortunately, our 12-year-old, he's starting to lose his hearing. So the verbal is not working as well. So, but he's also 12. He's not going. He's like, yeah, the squirrel's not worth it. You know, the risk reward is really small.
It's so cool what you do, Tom. You know, you make these relationships with people and their dogs possible. And kudos to you, man.
Thanks, Lisa. Appreciate it.
All right. So yeah, we'll check this out and appreciate your time and keep up the good work. And you know, we'll definitely recommend you.
Thank you, guys.
All
right, Michael, Lisa. Right. Good luck with Zeus, and just take it step by step, and you guys will see a different world with your dog. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Tom. All right, guys. Good luck. You too. Bye.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.